Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I am your host, Joe Felix. We are a podcast dedicated to analyzing, understanding, and trying to figure out what makes stand-up funny. Today we'll be discussing Kirk Fox's 2008 Jay Leno appearance. And here to talk to me about it is actually one of my favorite comics, Lupe Estrada. Started off in the Bay. Don't talk yet. Oh my God. Are you serious? Are you serious?
I'm so sorry.
Well, let's see if you can confirm all of my introduction. You started off in the Bay.
Correct. All right. Correct.
You're from SF?
I'm not from SF. I'm from SoCal, but I moved to SF for college.
Oh, for college and comedy.
Yeah.
Cool. And then you came back to LA. Mm-hmm. You killed it over here, you know. As we know, we met on Andrew Yanker, on the show that he co-hosts with Jessica Lange.
Yeah.
Called The Yanker Show at the Clubhouse.
Yeah, so a big
show. Yeah, I think it's one of the best shows in LA. It's super underrated.
I love it. But actually, we didn't meet there. We met that Boyle Heights show.
Oh yeah, we met at the Boyle Heights comedy nights.
Yeah, you're the doorman, and I was like, oh hey, what's up? And you're like, do you have a ticket? And I was like, oh, I'm on the show tonight. and then you let me in. Those shows were interesting. I mean, and then you did a set that night too, I believe, right?
Oh yeah, they put me on after the headliner. They're like, all right, let's put the doorman on.
Well, that's the thing about that show. There are just so many comics on it, like, because it was like a 2.5 hour, 3 hour saga, and
a saga, yeah.
And it had a lot of potential to be really a great thing. And I think the guy who books it had good nights, but I didn't want to invite people because it was just like, I don't want to put them through 2.5 hours of comedy. It's so odd, you know.
Yeah, I mean that guy ended up being like kind of awful.
Oh really?
Yeah. And I think I can speak about it openly, but from what I understood, his tactic was to get as many comics on so that they could, so he used their sort of like reach to promote his show, you know?
Yeah. And he or she
Yeah, they.
It just was like, it was really expensive. It was like $15 a ticket, and then even more at the door. And I just was like, oh, this is like, I don't want to be a part of this. But you'll give me a spot, I'll be there. We met there, and then we had another really good show at Andrew Yanker's Clubhouse show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have to move away for work to Europe, if I can disclose, Amsterdam.
Yes, I moved to Amsterdam in January.
And we had a big going away party, or a little thing at the bar, right?
Yeah. I had like a family thing and then a work thing. I think I had something else too. But I left LA to pursue comedy in Europe, which seems like such a backwards scenario, but it's pretty good here. Like the shows here are always pretty packed. Mics are always packed with audience members, and like, I can't hit like multiple mics a night, but
why?
Because they don't exist. It's everything's booked in advance. Someone's like, I have a mic next month. Who wants in? So you kind of have to be proactive in all those Facebook groups and like, I'll do it. So my goal is to get like at least on a mic or a show a night. I'll be really happy. But right now, when I was like before quarantine, I was averaging like 3 spots a night, but all the spots were 10 to 15 minutes. And
damn.
Yeah.
They say you have to leave Los Angeles if you want more stage time, and you really did it.
Yeah, pretty much. And it was cool. Like one night I got to go to like, my friend Brian Voki was doing comedy in Germany, and he's like, yeah, I'm here. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go see you do comedy. He's like, I'll get you a spot. So I went and I had a spot in Berlin. I just went for the night. It was dope. So
sick.
I'm like, once like the pandemic is like done, I'm really looking forward to like just traveling and my goal is to do a spot outside of the country once a month. That way I can just travel and have a spot somewhere. But yeah, it's pretty good here. I like it a lot. And there's not as much drama as there is maybe in the LA scene.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely there's a lot of turmoil. You see a lot of comics weeping in bathrooms. You see a lot of comics going broke, trying to do the one drink minimum.
Yeah. Well, speaking of crying in the bathroom, one time I remember have you ever been to the mic at Mexican Village?
No, I haven't.
It's Tuesday night. Oh, it was Tuesday night at Mexican Village, which is Korean. No, sorry, it's in Koreatown, at the Mexican restaurant. It's a pretty good mic. It kind of became my favorite. It's a good hang, and then people are also paying attention to your sets. But one time I had a set there, and there's this one comic that does voices. Like I forget his name, but he does really good voices. Like they're like really spot on Family Guy voices. But he kind of it doesn't do that well within like the comedy scene. I think like if he performs at a club, he'll do well because people will be like, "Yeah, that sounds like that guy's voice." But, I had a set and he had a set, and I was washing my hands in the bathroom, and we locked eyes in the mirror, in the reflection of ourselves in the mirror. And I was like, he was like, "Hey man, good set." And I was like, "Oh, thanks man. You know, good, you're really good voices." And he's like, "I just wish I was funny." I was like, "Whoa." I was like, "Damn, that was dark."
Damn.
And this is my second interaction with this guy in a bathroom at a mic.
Oh, really?
Another time, I tried to acknowledge him in the mirror while we were both washing hands, and he just, like, did not acknowledge me. Anyways, I hope that guy has a great career as a voice actor.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, you should make sometimes, you know, you do stand-up or sketch or whatever, and like you do some time there and you're like, maybe I should make a lateral move, you know? And maybe that guy should do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing about LA comedy is I've noticed it's a lot of, for at least my perspective, is there's a lot of people who love comedy and that's what they're doing and that's what they want to do well. But there's a lot of people who moved to LA who wanted to be actors in some way, whether it be dramatic or comedic. And they kind of at some point trickle their way into the open mic scene.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't like disagree with it. It's just something I've observed. One time I was at a mic and like the lead girl from East Los High was there.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh damn, that's pretty cool. And so that was kind of cool, like just seeing random celebrities do bomb at open mics. That was always interesting to see. But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, if they are someone that you recognize, you kind of lend them more attention at an open mic. You're like, oh, I know you. You're kind of like, you're interesting in the virtue of I have seen you on screen before.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but that is funny that, like, if they end up bombing and it's like, oh, man, the star power didn't really help you out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if they crushed, how disappointed you would be, though? Fuck. Oh, that was really good.
Yeah, no, I mean, that happens all the time. Because, like, you know, as a comic, I feel, I'm like, this could be, I feel like, this person is, like, kind of hacky or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've realized that people don't care about, maybe only comics really care about people being hacks. I think the general audience just cares about having fun.
Yeah.
So like, I wouldn't be surprised if like a celebrity, you know, given their star power and like, given that they have maybe just a few sort of relatable jokes that they found on like Instagram and they're like, I'm going to say them again right? Mm-hmm. Like this relatable thing that I saw in the post, I'm gonna just steal this. And like I can't, like I wouldn't be surprised if they just like did super well doing that.
Have you seen that happen where like actors are stealing jokes?
Oh yeah, I've seen comics just like straight up just repeat Instagram posts or Twitter jokes. Well,
from someone else or their own?
Yeah, from someone else. But I mean, here's the thing that I'm okay with like Twitter jokes being told. Well, here's the funky thing, right? You know, as a comic, you go up there and you know you come up with your own content, and you know you do like years, you like master it, right? Mm-hmm. But on Twitter, someone who doesn't go out there, you know, they can just like it's a lot easier to reach a bigger audience with your joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but yeah.
Well, it's like I've never like been super involved with Twitter. It's kind of like a seasonal thing for me. Like, mm-hmm. And by seasonal, I mean, like, I'll dip my toes in. I don't, like, involve myself in, like, arguments or controversies or anything like that. I just kind of observe every now and then. But I think there's – some of those jokes are really funny, and a lot of people argue, like, a Twitter joke doesn't translate on stage. But I think it could. It depends on how the person's delivering it, if it fits with, like, the persona or something. Because, like, I like one-liner comics, but I like one-liner comics that have, like, some sort of, like, performance with it. Like, a lot of Kirk Fox's jokes, who we'll talk about later, are one-liners, but he delivers it with such charisma, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe that.
Yeah. And I like it. And there's comics here or in L.A. who, like, will spit off one-liners, and I'm like, oh, man, if they just gave it with a little bit of, like an interesting personality or like, and they're growing and they'll get there. I'm like, oh, that would be, you know, it would make it much more entertaining.
I hear you loud and clear. I hear your criticism of my material.
Oh, I'm not saying you.
No, I hear it.
Well, yeah, I mean, myself too, I think everyone who does one-liners or not even just one-liners, anyone who does any kind of jokes, I feel like, that's what I love you most about comedy is like really like fine tuning like how I deliver jokes and my pauses or how I want to portray myself on stage. Cause like sometimes I feel like a hack because like who I am on stage is different than who I am in person, but not by much. It's just like a different version of me, you know?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. You like it's in one sense you want to be authentic and like have that authenticity, like, shine through, but you kind of have to put on a little bit more.
Yeah, stand up. I slow down a lot because I slur my words. Like I have a speech impediment, and I mumble. And sometimes people can't understand what I'm saying when I have regular conversations day to day. So like, on stage, I've had to slow myself down because I want the jokes to make sure people are understanding them. So. That's kind of why that's what's kind of inspired my slow delivery.
But, Cool. That's interesting. Yeah. And I mean, I imagine there are a lot of like very strong English speakers in Amsterdam.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there are. I mean, everyone here, I think the reason why, okay, first of all, everyone in Amsterdam that's Dutch, like learns English in grade school. And also like, I think the reason why maybe people in Amsterdam or the Netherlands are more proficient in English versus people maybe in Spain, France, or Germany is because all Hollywood content that comes to those countries are dubbed in those languages, but the Netherlands isn't a dub market. So like all those TV shows are just, they're all just subtitled in Dutch. So Friends, The Simpsons, South Park, every show that we grew up with, in English, they grew up with in English as well, with just Dutch subtitles. So, like, there's an immediate translation for them.
I do find it funny that imagine, like learning English through these subtitled, like, animations. But so then you end up, like, having a very sort of, like, character-y voice in English.
Yeah. Well, you also have a more, like... probably less, like just like a more valuable way of talking, because sometimes I speak to people and they have very like like it's very educated and very proper, you know. And I think when you watch this content, it kind of breaks it down. And a lot of the nomenclature is maybe the same. There's people I met here who are from here, or I'm like, "Are you from LA?" No, no, I'm from here, but the LA accent is very strong here.
What?
Yeah, depending on who you meet. It's very interesting. Not East LA, but LA, like Beverly Hills or West Hollywood. Like, it's I'm like, did you just come here from LA? I'm like, no, I grew up here.
They have like vocal fry?
I haven't noticed it that much here. Okay. You know what I haven't noticed here? There's a lot of comedy in LA where like they do like the way they deliver the joke is like ba 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 ba. I'm trying to like the punchline is very highlighted, right? Where it's like, "Cause I'm depressed." Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
So where they're like, "So that's a thing."
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But like, it's always like, in case you didn't know, this is where the punchline is, and this is where you laugh. I haven't heard that here, and it's super refreshing. Like, no one delivers in that kind of attitude, like that structure.
Yeah, it's funky to see that in LA. I'm glad it's not happening over there, but in Los Angeles, it's like it's almost like they're being insincere. They're being almost ironic with their punchline.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I think it's because like they're only performing from the comics. So it's like it's like everyone's in on the joke, but I noticed it very quickly and I'm like, this is bizarre. Like, this is really unsettling for me. But
that they're telling the punchline, so that was like that caught you off guard?
It just was like something I noticed pretty quickly.
What's the rhythm like? Is there any way you can do the bum bum bum, but for Amsterdam?
No, I haven't noticed it yet. And because it's interesting, you know how like LA, like everyone's like, our show is going to be more diverse and yada yada yada. All the shows here are diverse because it's a diverse city. So like, you'll have someone from Afghanistan, someone from Israel, someone from Romania, someone from Spain, someone from Mexico. It's like, it's a very like maybe the shows I've been on have been like manufactured to be that way, but a lot of the comics I've met are just from different parts of the world. So I haven't noticed a rhythm of the way people deliver jokes here.
Damn, that's really cool. Look at that. So how many years have you been doing stand-up?
I think there was a gap. I did it one time a long time ago. I think in 2008.
Yeah.
And then in 2014, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try it one more time, and I kept doing it from then on.
Oh, sick. Good.
Yeah, I think so. It's been 6 or 7 years for me. They've been doing it.
Nice, dude. You're in a good tenure.
Yeah. Kind of interesting. Yeah.
And you started off in the Bay. It feels like things might be a little different up there.
Yeah, the Bay Area. I started at a mic that probably every Bay Area comic started at. It was it's called the Brainwash. It was the longest running open mic in San Francisco. I think it was open for like 17 years, but it was at a laundromat / coffee shop / bar. And every Thursday they'd have a mic, and then it kind of grew into every day there'd be an open mic there. So that's just where all the comics would hang. That was the first time I did comedy twice. I did it my first night in 2008 and then again in 2014. But my very, very first time though, I remember there were some comics at the open mic who are pretty successful now. Like Chris Thayer was there. He was part of the team. And also, Donnie, I think Donnie Donovan, I forget his last name, but he is in Dress Up Gang.
Yeah.
He started curly hair, too. Right? Yeah, curly hair, yeah. So I remember seeing them around. And but I'm like, oh, that's so cool that they're like pretty successful and they kept
You're,
at it.
in those years, I also remember seeing Donnie at Meltdown or at Nerd Melt.
This is 2008?
Oh, okay, my bad, my bad. No,
Yeah.
like this is like 2010, 2012.
So I think he started in the Bay. I mean, I used to see him around at Brainwash, but yeah, that guy's so funny, and like that the dress up game is so good. And like with Frankie Quinones and all of them, it's such a good product.
It's a good collective. They're awesome. Shout out to them. But could you share with us? I think you have a little anecdote prepared about your early time doing stand-up.
Did you? I guess I think I read this wrong. Anecdote is like my first joke, or anecdote is like a story, because I have either one.
Hey, whatever you want to share with us, dude. No, you don't have to tell us your first joke if you unless you want to.
So I'll go back to 2008, because I checked out Brainwash first. I wanted to see what it was like, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. People were going up and telling jokes. And I called my friend Taylor, and he's one of the funniest guys I know. And I was like, hey man, next week you and I, let's do this open mic. And he was down. So he spent the week writing jokes, and we invited all of our friends, which is like a rookie mistake. Like anyone listening who hasn't done comedy yet, like don't invite your friends to your first open mic. I think it should just be a moment between you and the people there. Because like it for me, it was made me uncomfortable. When I invite people to shows today, it still makes me uncomfortable. I like to there to be like no one I know, if possible.
I agree with that.
But so I go on stage. I don't even remember the jokes. I had a joke about like about the Apollo Theater and like not. You know how everyone like rubs the tree stump at the Apollo Theater?
I didn't know that, but yeah.
I had a joke about not rubbing the tree stump, and that's what it wasn't funny. There's no structure. It was just like a funny premise, you know. I think it went on stage with more premise than actual jokes. And then my friend Taylor fucking killed it, like legitimately killed it for his first time. And the host, his name is Tony Sparks, known as like the godfather of comedy in the Bay Area. He looks at Taylor and he's like, Taylor, you're gonna get laid tonight. And I didn't get the same response. And Taylor never did comedy again, and I didn't do, and I just like that was all I wanted to do that one time. And then I ended up moving to LA in 2013, and then moving back to San Francisco. Sorry, I moved to LA in 2010, moved back to San Francisco in 2013, and after that, I moved back. That's when I started doing comedy more regularly. But yeah, that's the antidote. My first time just bombing. But I do have a
Damn.
first joke, I can tell you. It's a one-liner.
I mean that was a good story. But
Oh, thank
yeah,
you.
let's hear, I do want to hear your first joke. I want to see what your mind was, how you were cooking up.
The first joke I remember telling at my. So it was the second time I did comedy, like many, many years later. One of the jokes you remember was a porn joke, obviously, but it was sometimes I spend all day watching porn, and other days just aren't as productive. And
That's good.
that was a joke, and I like it to this day because it's not too vulgar. It's a good one-liner, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, but the thing is, I can go to any show. There's like a lot of porn material, so I'm like, I measure the room,
Yeah.
yeah, but
Damn, dude. That is a good one. Do you still use it sometimes?
yeah, I'll throw it in every now and then.
Very good, very good. Well, yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Now that we know you're a master at your craft, or not, we are gonna listen to the clip by Kirk Fox, and then we're also gonna hear a word from our sponsors. So
Sure.
stick around.
Cool.
Fox!
Yeah.
Let me just take it in a minute, see what I'm up against. All right, this is good. I actually don't have a lot of time up here, so I just want to talk about my dinner last night. I think that's about all I have time for in this particular moment. Beverly Hills, last night, all by myself, just waiting for the check. Suddenly this guy lands across from me like it's a speed date, just landed there. I'm like, dude, what's going on? He's like, I'm gay, I'm 30, I make $10 million a year, I have a house in Malibu, New York, I have a jet, I speak four languages, I'm into fashion, I'm a chef, I'm a salsa dancer. I'm like, bro, you had me at, I'm gay. And he's like, really? He's like, really? I'm like, no, I just thought it'd be funny. You know, I was a little freaked out. I was like, what makes you think I'm gay? And he's like, your mustache. I was like, dude, my mustache is gay. I'm not. And I can shave this off. I don't know what you're going through right now, but this is just brittle hair. It's fine. Then he leaned in and he said, would you have sex with me right now for $100,000? I was like, dude, I don't know who you think I am or what you've heard, but I don't have that kind of money on me. Could maybe get a couple hundred bucks together. I mean, when does this really have to go down? I can't even remember my PIN number. I'm so flustered. Then the valet wanted 20 bucks. I'm like, 20 bucks? What'd you do, change the oil? Did you rotate the tires? I mean, I had the bald spots all pointed in. I live on a hill. He's like, 20 bucks. I'm like, you know what? Keep the car. Just keep it. You guys are good, but you cut into my time when you clap that long. So just save it for the end. I know what you're up to. I'm fine. I'm at peace. Then the valet was like, hey, it's a hybrid. It's a good car. I'm like, it's biodegradable. It's like a banana peel. It'll be gone in 6 weeks. It's yours now. Then he was like, just go. I'm like, tip me, and I'll go. I actually have the hybrid. I went green. Now I'm seeing red. Let me tell you about it. Here's the question. What good is 45 miles per gallon if when you get there, all your friends are gone? It's the slowest car in the world. Save the environment. Why? When I get there, everything will be closed. 0 to 60, and I'm not sure. I've only had it a month. 0 to 50 in about 3 weeks, I can tell you that. I'm gonna get spinning rim spinners like P. Diddy, just for momentum, just so I can maybe get to 60. I'd love to see 60, or maybe get out of the garage without a running start, you know? Don't worry about the hose. There's no water in it, Herbie. You know what it says on my mirror? Objects in mirror are about to run your butt over. I was going up the steep part of the 405 out here in L.A. I heard honk, honk, honk. I looked behind me. There was a semi with a house on the back. A house is faster than my car. A whole house. And then I start thinking, wow, how lazy of a packer do you have to be to say, honey, let's just take the house. I don't want to wrap up any more books or dishes or glass dolphins. Let's just take this house we've lived in for 20 years and move it across the street. This house ran me off the road. Wrote down the address. Street kept changing, but I will find this house, and I will buy it with the 100 grand I made last night, and I will blow it up on YouTube. All right, last thing before I go, because I kind of want to sit next to you for just one second. Only because it'd be the three best-looking guys on TV. Okay. So I just bought my first house. I just closed escrow, ladies and gentlemen. And they say it's not really a time to buy, but if you look around, you can find the right place. This house that I just bought, next door to Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. I mean, it's in Cambodia. $15. $15. eBay. eBay. Put down 10. You don't put it all down. Got a little mortgage, 30 cents a month, 60 years. fixed, adjustable. I got the whole thing. But ladies like that stability. You know, they're like, you got a house? Yeah, I got a house. Where is it? Doesn't really matter where it is. It's on the beach. Malibu, maybe, I guess. Could be big enough wave. It might make it to Malibu. You guys, thanks a lot.
Fantastic set. Kirk Fox does it again.
Definitely. Does it again. His first time. Well, his first time, like, his first time on Tonight's Show, I believe. I think he's had two sets on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and they were like 6 months from each other. So I'm not sure which one that is.
That's really close. That's to be invited back till soon.
Yeah.
And you can really tell that it was 2008 because of the Brad and Angelina joke.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he could. I guess that's the only dated version of it, huh? I mean, like, there's also like the hybrid sport car, but that's still a thing today. Yeah, I do like Kirk Fox a lot. He's to me, he's like a real craftsman when it comes to jokes. Like, there's no, it's like, I picture if he was in any profession, he'd be a real craftsman at whatever he was doing, right? So, like, if he worked at a deli, he would carve the finest meat.
Perfect slice, perfect marbling.
Which, interesting fact, I used to work at a deli, and I carved the meat really nicely. But I feel like he would be my manager.
What a way to put that in there. What a way to relate that about you.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, let's talk about Kirk Fox, but also me. I think he comes in strong, right? Like, you know, he's like, okay, I'm in control here. The way that he starts his set might be like, all right, let me take a moment to see what I'm working with here.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that as an opening line?
I feel like it's a risk, but the way he delivers, like, just everything's like delivered so, it's so packaged so nicely, you know? And like, he's like, that charisma is just there the entire time. And the pauses are just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. I know that throughout the set, he has these pauses, but at the same time, we'll get there, but there are times where after he delivers a joke, he's still setting up for the next joke, like, as the audience is laughing.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I noticed when he got the applause break, he, like, snapped at them for a little bit. And I liked it. It was good. It worked. Because he was like, yeah, your applause is appreciated, but it's eating into my time. I wonder if that was off the cuff. Because if it was, it's ballsy on network television, you know?
Nah, he's probably done it a few times. I know that for those, they sometimes they'll have you tape again if your set doesn't go well.
I've only heard that for Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, is that true?
I've heard there's one infamous bomb, and ever since then he lets people tape it again if they don't like the first set.
Oh, I've also heard it for Conan.
Oh, maybe it's the same thing. The thing about Conan that I don't like is that I love Conan, but I all these older sets, the hosts are always introducing the comic. It's always Conan, like, here's so and so, or Jay Leno, here's so and so. And now when someone performs on Conan, they just have a clip of them starting their first joke. There's no introduction. And I feel like that's such like an honor to be introduced by one of these late night hosts, you know? And
yeah, definitely.
To remove that from the set seems like unfortunate to me.
Yeah. I don't know what sort of practice, like, why that changed or why that isn't happening with... Is it with just Conan?
There's only, like, sets I watch, so I've noticed it on Conan.
Damn, okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that was one of the retapes.
Maybe.
Okay. I do like... Okay, so he comes out, he's like, okay, you know, you guys are in safe hands, right? This is my thing, this is my time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he tells a story of the guy introducing himself, on him.
The rich man.
And the thing that threw me off about the punchline, you know, you had me at I'm gay.
Uh-huh.
Is that you think as an audience member, oh, he's gay. Okay, like this is a new piece of information.
Yeah.
But immediately he pulls back on that. He's like, I'm not.
Yeah.
My mustache is gay. Which are the... Go ahead.
No. The laugh he got that you had me at McGay was surprising too. Like, maybe in time, you know? But it's still very funny to me. He says my mustache is gay.
My mustache is gay. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and then what does he follow it with?
Then the guy goes, you know, would you have sex with me for $100,000?
I don't have that. And he goes,
I don't have that. I don't know what you heard about me.
Yeah.
Which that's a good misdirection, right?
Yeah.
He ends up subverting that. And I feel like that kind of joke is one that you can tell amongst your friends. Like, you can definitely use that same punchline, like, mm-hmm. in other situations. Like, with any sort of offer that might be less than appealing,
mm-hmm.
you can always subvert it like that.
Yeah.
Or, like, then he gets into... And this is one thing about stand-up. Like, people need to be able to understand what's happening, whether you're telling one-liners that don't have anything to do with each other, or if you're telling one-liners that kind of tell a story. You need a good segue to get you to your next sort of set of jokes.
Yeah, definitely.
And so he leaves the establishment where he's having a drink, and he got hit on, and he goes to the valet, right? Mm-hmm. The valet's like, well, it's $20, right? And you're already, you know, it's absurd, right? And something that we kind of run into as people too, right? You always have to be able to relate. And like even $20, right? $20, maybe. I mean, what would you say is a typical cost for valet?
Me?
Yeah, $5-$10.
I haven't had a car in a long time, so I have no idea.
Oh, you're not getting your cars valeted all the time?
No, even when I get out of the car, I'm in valet.
Yeah, me neither.
But everyone in valet is in LA. That's what I hear. I get what you're saying. Like, it was a really smooth transition, but I think sometimes mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree that like the transition has to relate to the next joke. I feel like sometimes when there's a big gap between the two jokes, like it can still work really well.
Because
even the gap could. That the difference between the two subjects could be a joke in itself, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that he had a good segue.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I 100% agree. But I am interested to watch more of his material to see when he doesn't have segues and how he transitions those bits.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do as a stand-up. It's just be like, okay, so you just heard me. Yeah, you just take like an extra long pause kind of.
Yeah.
And you tell your next joke.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know if that's your approach, but if my jokes aren't relating to each other.
Sometimes mm-hmm. I try to find some sort of connection, but then I'm just like, oh, whatever, I don't give a fuck. but I try to space it out where if there is no connection, the disconnect is what makes it funny, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I remember forcing some segues sometimes, and like because of trying to segue a certain way, I'll tell like jokes that I think feel kind of like fillers, just so I can have them bridge to like the two subjects that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always work out. I'm just sharing that because we're talking. I mean, you know, this podcast is dedicated to like teaching people a little bit more about stand up and how that works.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I'm trying to think of what. So after the valet, he says, because he offers the valet his car. He's like, you can just take it.
Yeah. He's like, you know, I'd rather not pay for $20. Just take the car. And he does this very quick little quip. But I feel like, you know, I like Kirk Fox a lot, but you know, I think he's been kind of like kind of fakey, fake edgy.
Yeah.
when he goes, you know, just, you know, when the valet goes, you know, just go. And he goes, yeah, tip me.
What don't you like about that?
Oh, I think he, I mean, he's very charismatic and he can pull off a lot of his jokes. Uh-huh. But some of them are just like, he's being a little like fake edgy, right? Like the sort of like if your uncle was telling you a joke and he was like trying to be sassy.
I could see, you know, it's funny. I feel like Chris Fox does have a lot of dad jokes, but they're a little more, well, like, they're seasoned better than dad jokes, right? But I can see what you're, I think, I know what you're saying.
That's a way better word, dad joke. Yes. Yeah. No, but yeah, they're seasoned. They're like, he's done these at bars. And
yeah.
I think I talked about this on like the previous show, but it's always interesting because like going out to a bar or a comedy club at night, it's like, you know, it almost feels counterculture. It feels like you're like kind of edgy, right? You're going to go out for drinks. You're going to go get messed up on beer, right? Uh-huh. But what you get at the end, what the result is like, you get these dad jokes, which are like the opposite of cool and edgy.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you're really digging it, right?
Yeah. I guess it depends on where you go. You know what always fascinates me about seeing like older like comics that I appreciate on the Tonight Show or just their sets on TV is like just knowing that they had a hustle before that, you know, like they were going to open mic. Could you imagine going to open mics with like Kurt Fox back in the day? I mean, he was doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. Yeah, he came out of San Diego.
I think he's from San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, he came from a different... I know, like, Bobby Lee also came out of there, and it's a different scene. And, yeah, definitely it shapes what your comedic voice is like, in a sense. But, yeah, I can't imagine going... Actually, it's hard for me to imagine going to an open mic that isn't one where, like, you're just, like, competing for time or just waiting, like, 2 hours... for your name to be drawn from a bucket.
Yeah.
It sounds like heaven, like an older open mic, like from the 80s where you're like, okay, yeah, I go up and I do what, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds amazing.
Well, I feel like that probably still exists in other parts of the country, you know, but but yeah, I don't know if Fred Fox like started in San Diego or if he, because I know he's from San Diego, but I also know he's been acting since like the 90s. So I'm interested to know what his path was. Was it like comedy then acting then comedy, both at the same time? Because he's been in quite a bit of like TV shows and movies, not like big roles, but just there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick to get back to this, the material. One way that he starts to talk crap about his car. Right, he kind of like does set a precedent, or like he does lead into it by offering to leave the valet of his car. One way that he starts talking more about car culture is with this little quip where he goes, you know, I went green, but now I'm seeing red.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I didn't know what he meant when he said, I'm seeing red.
Oh, like he's angry.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was one thing where that didn't click for me. But I know you got
like a bull, like a matador.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, since I didn't get it, it's not a good joke. when he offers, there's a point where he gets that applause break. Is that when he offers the valet to take his car? Like, he's like, you can just have it. When does he get that?
I think that might be one of them, yeah. He has several applause breaks.
I'm interested to know, like, if that was literally just a light, like, applause.
Yeah,
that's kind of unfortunate. I don't like that. Because I think the laughter is enough, you know? Yeah.
I kind of want to do like a solo one of these, and then like every time I'm like I don't understand the joke. I'm like, yeah, bad joke. I didn't get it.
Have you had that happen where, like, you guys just did, whoever you're interviewing, like, you just had different takes on the set?
Oh, no. I don't think I ever aim to be, like negative. I don't like to make negative comments about the material.
Okay.
So I think, and I hope that my guests don't either.
Yeah.
So yeah, that hasn't happened, but I have run into issues where it's like, we try to figure out why this person did the joke, like what the origin of the joke was. That's where we sort of disagree. Like one of the big things is like, and like, this one was with Chel, the episode of Chel Hernandez, and Ali as my co-host. They were talking about how like all humor comes from like a place of sadness, right? Mm-hmm. Or like morose.
Mm-hmm.
And I disagree that all humor happens that way. Right?
Oh yeah.
I think some people are just like funny. It's like, yeah. It's like, cause it's a form of intelligence, right?
Yeah.
And like recently, Seinfeld was on,
Mark Maron.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to that.
And they had this discussion where it's like, where Mark was like, yeah, no, I mean, don't you feel something more? Like, you know, that what compelled you to tell these jokes, start doing stand-up, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, Seinfeld's like, oh, yeah, I'm funny. You know, I'm just a funny guy.
Yeah, exactly what happened. And basically Seinfeld at the end was like, I'm happy to come back. And he's like, well, I don't know how much deeper we can get into. Like, you keep putting roadblocks up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very, almost like a nervous tango that was happening.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, Jerry won't relent. He's too, right, like, into his opinion. And Mark was at a disadvantage given that he's a host and he wants... I don't think he cares about being liked, but he still wants to, like, produce something good with Jerry. But Jerry was just like, nah, no, you can't convince me otherwise.
Yeah, it was... I think, like, people were waiting for this interview for a very long time. So I think there's a lot of tension because of that. But it also was over, like, Zoom or whatever, so it doesn't make for a good experience. But that was an interesting interview. And I hope they interview each other again. So, but, yeah, I agree with you that, like, not every joke comes from a dark place, you know?
Yeah, but I think, I think Kirk is a good example of that. I think he's just observing that it's, like, stuff is weird.
Yeah.
Here's the weird thing. Let me riff on it. Let me see how far I can push like a hypothetical situation. Cause we all know that we like sometimes as comedians, we fib or we exaggerate or accentuate, or we use euphemisms that can lead you to believe that something is like worse or crazier than it actually was. And, with Kirk, I think he just does that. He might be a sad guy, like with his life, but I don't know if like, that's what's motivating him to do comedy. I think he's just a talented dude.
Yeah, you know what I loved about that his set there, and even when I'm seeing him in live, is that his stuff is never like, he wasn't making a point. He wasn't making like some strong political statement. He was just telling funny jokes, you know, like one after another. Just like bam, 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 bam. And it wasn't like he wasn't like trying to lecture someone, you know? And that's what I think about it.
Okay, I'm hearing your criticism. All right. I'll change up my act. I get it.
What? No. What are you talking about? If anything, I feel like this material scene you do is very like joke, 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 right?
Okay, yeah, sure.
I know, I'm confident in that. I like when there's like just like this assault rifle of humor and not so much like I'm gonna tell you.
If I go up there and you're hosting a show, can you call me the assault rifle of humor?
Sure, yeah. I mean, coming from America, yeah.
Yeah, they'll definitely like. They're like, yeah, that's the very American thing to call some. he's a bald eagle of humor.
Yeah, the assault rifle of humor. I like that. I appreciate that Kirk Fox just had like one joke after another, because sometimes you don't get that, unfortunately. So
yeah. Yeah, but I think the ability to like point out things that are strange in itself is political, or it's at least social political, right? Because that ability lends itself to like dissecting things in your day to day that are kind of bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, when you hear stories of your friends getting into like maybe scuffles at work,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a way in which they present like the actions done by someone else as absurd, right? And you want to laugh because you're like, yeah, that is weird. Yeah. That person acts that way.
Yeah.
And I think if we're getting smarter by being able to point things out like that.
Sure. Do you have an example?
No.
Okay, cool. That's fine.
Cool, awesome. Thanks, man.
You can edit this out. No.
Nah, that's too much work. Okay, let's go back to this.
You should edit it where instead of I say example, I'm like, do you have, and you just say salsa, and you're like, yeah. or you like you have, and then you just like put in your your commercial break. Like, do you have?
Yeah, I don't know. Pepsi? Add a second commercial break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you use the Anchor app to record your podcasts?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
So yeah, he segues into like this car culture thing. He talks about being on the 405 there in Los Angeles, like going up a hill.
Very local reference.
Very local, very SoCal, locale sort of thing. You know, what's good? What's 45 miles to the gallon good when your friends are gone, when you arrive? He talks about, you know, the slow acceleration, about how he uses spinners to gain momentum. I like the running start for the Prius. I think that was my the different imageries that he presents. I think that's one of my favorite. And like, here's like a good rule of three, right? He sets it up, premise, you know, here's your big lead-in joke. You know, what's 45 miles per gallon good when they're gone, right? So he's like, without saying it, you know, they're slow. It's very clear that that's what he's saying. Then, you know, talks about the acceleration, spinners, running start. He gives really good examples of things that you would do to make it faster.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, and this is like, I think when you're writing jokes, this is a very fun game to play. Where you're like, what's the funny? I can come up with a lot of funny things. But what's like the funniest thing? How do I keep heightening with each example?
And can I ask, when you do that, like, what do you typically aim for? Like, do you aim for absurdity? Do you aim for something that people can relate to? Because it is a fun game. So I'm just looking at different tips and stuff.
Yeah, I like, I like to reach like a very like critical absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I can throw a reference in there or something, because, you know, comedy loves detail and being able to recognize detail. What I go for is, I also am very selfish or like biased, and I'll be like, maybe let's see if I can make this a little political, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the tags will be like kind of political, but or like I'll use something like alliteration, right? People like alliteration, or maybe using like a euphemism that's popular, or like a double talk, right? That I can. So yeah, I try to use all sort of like figurative language,
mm-hmm.
and imagery. But what about yourself?
Well, you're kind of putting me on the spot. I'm kidding. I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
How about this? Let me ask you this. Do you write jokes, or do they just come to you in a dream?
They definitely don't come to me in a dream. I definitely write down everything in a notepad or two, but I'll rewrite them as much as I can. But I have like, because sometimes like the rule of threes is like, maybe the first two aren't funny, but the third one is, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I have this joke about fentanyl, and like, I get a good response, and like, it's a longer joke, but I tell the audience, you know, that a lot of people like if fentanyl, Michael Jackson, is both Michael Jackson and Prince have been rumored to die from it, and a lot of people in Florida, and I got a really good response when I say that, but like I don't know if it's good or not. I don't know if that's just like a cheap shot at people in Florida, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's like a known reference. Yeah,
yeah, but like I was like, it works here in another country. Like people like were like, oh, like Florida's a joke globally, basically.
Yeah. So people know, that Florida thing, one of the reasons that Florida is like such a punching bag for like late night shows, mm-hmm. is because they're one of the few states that like really releases that sort of information about criminals and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So other states are just a little more like gated and they don't have much data out there?
Yeah, it might still be the case that Florida is just worse. But, you know.
Yeah, Florida's been a punching bag my entire life. It's bizarre. Yeah. But it seems like a lovely place with lovely people. So that's interesting. Yeah, interesting point.
I remember taking a late night writing class, and they were just like, you know, if you can't find any news articles that you can, like, kind of, you know, make a joke off, just, you know, Google news in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. Where was this class?
Where?
Yeah.
Second City.
Ah. How was it? Yeah. Sorry. I don't want
to hear it. It was actually a really good class. I can't say her name, but she was a good teacher.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
Yeah.
You don't remember her name?
Oh, I know it.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes you're like, yeah, you're like, I guess this punchline is good enough for the moment.
Yeah. I'm interested in reworking this joke to see what I can say. It's a little more, not as easy, you know?
Can I share a quick thing that happened? Sure. Like when it comes to like trying to figure out how to like formulate jokes. So sometimes you have the material, you're like, this would be an interesting premise. I just don't know how to like write it. I have a closing joke that goes like this. You know, I've been having a lot of trouble sleeping, so I just bought a white noise machine, but I bought the wrong kind. I bought it online, and so whenever I turn it on, it's just a bunch of people talking about morality while still occupying a land they took through genocide, right? Yeah. And I remember after doing like that final joke at the Ace Hotel. At the Ace Hotel, yeah.
What show did you get at the Ace Hotel?
Stand Upstairs with Louis Katz.
How was that?
That was a lot of fun.
That sounds dope, dude. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. I want to hear more about that, but go on.
Yeah, but like, Vanessa Gonzalez, James Adomian were on the bill. Bree Pruitt was like substitute hosting because I think Louis was out of town. But yeah, after I got off stage, James Adomian goes to me. He goes, hey, man, I've been trying to do that joke, but I never found a way to like word it. He's something like that, right? He's like, yeah, that's the way you tell that joke. That was perfect, right?
Whoa, what a compliment.
Yeah, that was a big compliment. But also big shout out to both Bree Pruitt of Faded Comedy and James Adomian of like The Underculture and like Close Enough and all these big things. Vanessa Gonzalez, I know recently, I think she was on the Up Next, the Comedy Central thing. Yeah. And I've done a few other shows where she was gracious enough to like headline. Big shout out to them. But yeah, when it comes to like writing jokes, like you really, like you want to write like a very like an economic joke. You want to be very careful with your wording. You want to make sure you hit the right like words and like right impact.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, I definitely noticed that with you, like you're. you're very careful with what you say and how you say it, and like not in a bad way. Like I feel like you just put a lot of care into your writing style, and I try to do the same. But sometimes I feel like I'm keeping myself from really having a good time on stage, right? Because I'm so to the script.
Yeah.
So I do try to like free myself up every now and then.
Oh, good, good. I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, because I started doing stand-up in L.A., you know, you start off with, like, 3-minute sets, 5-minute sets. So it's like, I don't have time to stretch my legs, right? I can't really develop a persona in that way up there because I have limited time. And, but I do want to say this. I think it's funny, like, when you and I, if it ever happens again, when we're booked on the same show, I remember that night when we did that show at the Clubhouse. I was like, dude, I don't have to be here because Loop is here, right? He's also like he's a good one-liner, right? Latino guy, right?
No.
So like, yeah, like it's no, it's superfluous, dude. It's redundant that we're both there.
I don't know about that, man. You know what's funny? I remember a lot of people would always be like because Chris Estrada and I share the same name because my birthday is Christian.
By the way, Chris is a great stand-up in LA. He also was part of the Up Next. Big shout out to him. Great guy, very supportive.
Yeah, Chris is great. He's very funny. And like the only reason why I changed my name to Lupe is because he's a good comic. Like if there were just some other comics named Chris Estrada, I wouldn't care. But he's a good guy. He's very funny, and I'm really proud of his work. I'm proud of him and what he's done. But whenever people would be like, you got to change your name before he did, like, you got to change your name. And I'm just like, I feel again, it's confused. I'm like, why don't you change your act? Because like yours is just like someone else's. Like, sure, we have similar names, but we have different material. We're not doing the same shit as each other, you know?
Yeah.
But when there's comics who just have the same material, it's like, you can't tell them apart. Even though they have different names.
Yeah, that like stereotype of like white dudes going up to talk about their dick is very much true, right? Like people will just go up and do material of like what's trending on Twitter, and like you'll hear the same joke 5 or 6 times at a mic.
Yeah, and I the thing I love most about mics is that like I can understand what people are talking about, and I'm like, okay, I want to avoid that because everyone's talking about this one thing that's just going to kind of go away with time and not be relevant. So I'm going to just kind of avoid it. And another thing I like to do is if there's if I wanted to tell a joke about a white guy, I hear white guy so much on stage that like, how can I tell it without saying white guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to approach it.
Or if there's a joke about a Karen, like how can I say it without saying the word Karen and make it so people still know what I'm talking about? That's what's fun.
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of puts you in a place of it gives your audience more credit, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You don't look down on them for not understanding or being able to like understand the subtext of your joke. But also it starts to put you in a place where you're like very good at reflecting upon your own jokes, and in turn, you know, other comics take notice, and you slowly start to become like a comics comic, and like it's a good place to be, because definitely. You know,
that's what I love about it, just the craft, you know.
Yeah, believe it, and for all those listening, believe it or not, there are a lot of us who love the craft, and we want to go up there and do a really good job. And like being funny is not just like going up there and being and goofy, which is no knocking down anyone who like who has very good like act outs or character stuff, right? But it's being a writer. You know, you don't want to be hackneyed anyway, and you don't want to like, and it's very hard because I know a lot of people have trouble finding their own voice as stand-ups. And so they just kind of adopt someone else's. And that's unfortunate.
And I've heard like other comics talk about how like every comic has like a phase where they kind of replicate this comic or this comic, and like I wonder like who am I replicating and who like do people think I sound like someone else or like I'm ripping their style? So I know there's a lot of comics who have like a slower delivery, so I feel like any one of us who has that slower delivery are going to be lumped together. But I'm like there's different things that I can like try to separate myself by, whether it's how I tell a joke, not so much the delivery. Yeah, it is a challenge, and like I'm really interested to know where both of us land and how we like evolve in the next few years. Not just the two of us, but every comic I know, you know?
No, dude, it's just you and me.
Yeah. And like that's what I love about it too. Like you see comics like working stuff out and like growing. And then sometimes you don't see comics doing that. And that's fine too, I guess. Yeah. But by the
Yeah.
way, Lewis Katz is fucking hilarious, and so is James Adomian. I'm not too familiar with Free Pruitt, and I've seen Vanessa Gonzalez before, but I remember I saw Lewis Katz at the Boyle Heights show, and
Yeah,
he's
that's where I met
so
him too.
fucking funny. And then James Adomian is like, I've been a fan of this for a while. He's fucking fantastic. He's so good.
Well, if I could, I know I'm holding you hostage, kind of, but I want to share this too. Oh, because you understand like how important that these sort of interactions are. I remember, so when I was like fresh out of high school, Dave Ross and Jeff Wattenhofer had a show called Holy Fuck. That was at the Downtown Independent in Los Angeles, and it was every Tuesday night. It was Holy Fuck free comedy. And I remember seeing James Adomian there several times, right? But most notably, I remembered him from the album that they had recorded, where he goes on to play a character called something. Damn, the Sheriff of Nottingham, or something like that. And I just, in virtue of like not, I never remember James's face, right? I'll remember people's jokes. I remember their act and stuff, but face is a little different. And I remember one time I was on the red line with a buddy going I don't know where, and James Adomian comes up to me, right? And I didn't recognize him as James, and he goes, "Hey man, I saw you do comedy at this event, like my friend." So I had done a set at Latinx Comedy Pachanga, and he goes, "Yeah, you're really funny and this and that." I'm like, "Oh yeah, what?" And like, oh, okay, cool, right? Like, I thought he was just some guy. And then I'm like, oh, then we started talking about comedy. He's like, yeah, I've been doing it for a while, right? He's like describing being James Adomian. And then we got on the train, we're kind of headed in the same direction for a bit. And I go, oh, cool, can I follow you on Instagram or whatever, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, all right, just write this J Adomian. I'm like, wait, what? Right?
That's so
That's
funny.
when it clicked, right? And then, yeah. So yeah, that was
That's cool.
yeah.
That's an honor. I remember I've been on shows with him and like, oh, I've been on a show with James Adomian. And like, he'd show up kind of like later and like miss my set. So like, I didn't feel like we were really on a show together. But it was still cool. Like, I gotta tell him like I'm a fan of his, you know. But I love his he has a lot of good like his voice work is great. He does a really good Tom Lykus. I don't know if you remember Tom Lykus, but he was like a shock jock from like the 2000s.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he has a whole like library of this great voice work on different podcasts that I recommend anyone to check out.
Oh yeah, go check out The Underculture.
Yeah, I'll check
That's a
that
big
out.
one. Yeah, well, he does like a ton of voices. See, Matt, yeah, James Adomian is like really incredibly underrated, I think, in the public eye.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, but enough. Enough gushing over that guy.
You should go back
Yeah, K Kirk. Sorry, buddy.
to
Who was recently on what was the sketch? Damn, I keep forgetting the name.
Kirk. The cute house one, right? The dress up
The cute
game?
house one. Yeah, the
Oh
dress up game is cute house. Yeah.
His line where he's like, What'd you say, Mijo? The whole sketch is fantastic, and I recommend everyone should watch it. But sometimes I'll just scrub through it just that one spot. We're praying Frankie's Tia. What'd you say, Mijo? What did he say? He's like a pozole. What is it, like a stew?
Damn, dude, we got to get a show where we put all these good comics up. And we pay them like hundreds of dollars, and we just do like 2 or 3 minute sets.
Oh yeah, that'd be dope. It sounds financially irresponsible, but it sounds dope.
So now he's on the freeway. You know, a house is faster than his car because it's a house that's being pulled in a semi truck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he kind of is like, you know, how lazy of a person do you have to be to, like, while you pack, to be like, you know what? Let's just move the house.
You know who did that? Who just moved their house? Tim Allen. It was a series finale of Home Improvement. they just took the house.
Oh, damn.
They're moving to. Yeah. That's America. Anyways, that's what it made me think of, the last episode of Movement.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Shout out to Tim Allen. The house is faster than my car. You know, the house almost ran him off the road. You know, I wrote down the address, but the street kept changing. you just really need to sit down and think about, well, not sit down, but you can, I like to walk around when I write jokes. Mm-hmm. But you just got to explore it, right? What's like the weird juxtaposition, right? A house almost ran me off the road.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. Like very just like a thing that doesn't move almost did a thing that does move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then he ends it with, he ends that quick little house bit with, you know, and this is a callback. He sets it up perfectly because... not to knock anybody down, but a lot of new comics won't space out the callbacks. They'll they'll mention the subject, then like maybe one or two punchlines later, they'll do the callback, and it's too soon.
that has to be your slogan. That has to be your it's too soon. Please let that be your get her done.
I'll shop it around. I'll do some folks.
Funny. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I callbacks are, it's funny. Like people have such strong opinions of callbacks. I'm indifferent. Callbacks are very popular here. I noticed.
Oh, really?
Like, comedy here is like, it's comedy traditionally here is cabaret, which is longer drawn out, like song and dance. But like the seasoned comics here, they love a good callback. And it's not too soon. The callback is to like the first, they end their set with a callback from a joke like 20 minutes prior. You know?
Damn.
Yeah.
So, but real quick, we should mention what the callback was.
Oh, yeah.
He says that, you know, he'll find the house that ran him off the road and he'll use he'll buy it with the $100,000 that he made last night, which is. A callback to the offer that the guy made him at the beginning of the set.
Yeah.
We gotta start wrapping up. He goes, I just bought a house next door to Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. It's in Cambodia.
In Cambodia. It's so stupid. And then he says, like, women love a man with a house. And, like, he like tells him, like, where's your house? He's like, I don't know, wherever he wanted to be, like in Malibu, or like waves hit hard enough in Malibu or something.
And here's the thing, right? Like, that was like the Cambodia thing, the way that he paced it, the pause just before he said Cambodia, was enough. It felt like a closing joke. It felt like there were going to be no tags. But as people are laughing, he's hitting these tags. And almost like in like almost like he's being shoved out of the room sort of way where he's like, I got to do these tags, you know, because it was a big enough laugh to end off Cambodia. But, you know, Kirk Fox, charismatic guy, he does it. He knows what he was doing.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I just trip out when comics will like talk through laughs.
Oh, yeah.
I've never gotten used to it, right? Unless like I'm in a rush, right? Or I'm like anxious, but
yeah.
I think it's funky because I'm like, shut up, right? Well, I'm trying to talk here.
Well, the reason why what I've dealt with is like I have these amount of jokes that fit a 5-minute time slot, and you're really fucking interrupting that right now with your jokes, with your laughter. So
yeah, with your happiness.
Yeah, so I mentally had to be like, okay, like don't time it to be exactly like 5 minutes. Time it to be 4 to 4.5. Slow it down and just let the laughter live, you know. So
yeah, that's good advice, I think, for beginning comics. It's like give the audience some time to laugh when you plan it yourself.
Yeah. Unless you know you're not going to get laughs, then you know, cram it to 5. But
you know, I mean, if you know you're going to get laughs, then just leave.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's good advice. Don't feel like you have to do it a type 5. The type 5 should allow for some laughter.
Yeah, and maybe a little banter up top. If whatever, I mean, it depends on you. Got to play by ear. Yeah. Just to summarize the set. You know, it's all he's a one-liner comedian who plays it off well because of his charisma. Not that one-liner comedians need it, but you know, he got to where he is because of his attitude, because he kind of has a persona on stage.
Mm-hmm.
He's very straightforward with how he lays out his premises. He's able to like build off the previous jokes. He keeps like heightening. He keeps exploring the subject, right? In this set, he talks about being hit on, about you know cars and valets, and then again cars and the homes, and then the homes and that's pretty much it. And it's yeah, he managed to do 5 minutes, 5.5 minutes of material with 5 subjects.
Yeah, and some applause breaks.
And applause breaks. Also, you know, comedy. Like I'll keep saying this: comedy loves detail. If mm-hmm. I just mention, if I just go up there and like Tostino pizza rolls, people will laugh. People will be like, "Yeah, I know that."
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I don't think people here know what Tostino pizza rolls are. I struggled with that, with having to change some references here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a joke about Donnie Marie Osmond, and no one knows who Donnie Marie Osmond here, so it's my favorite joke, but I never got to say it here, so I'm bummed about that.
Oh, I know that joke. It's on your Instagram, right?
Oh, yeah, I think I did do a story about it one time. So I've asked people, like, if there's anyone similar to Donnie and Marie Osmond here, that I could maybe change it up. But this joke is the only thing driving me back to LA. Like I want to go back to LA just so I can say this joke, and then I'll take a flight back.
Well, you know what? I'll talk to you about this later, but there might be an opportunity for you to do that remotely.
Is this like a Zoom show?
Well, it's not just a Zoom show.
I didn't say just a Zoom show. I said, is it a Zoom show? You put the word just in there. I didn't.
Well, I understood your tone.
Oh, you said it's not just a Zoom show. It's much more. Okay, I get it.
It's much more.
Yeah, keep me posted.
So, anyways, any final thoughts on the set?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm holding a kitten right now that's scratching me. my only thoughts on the set is like I want more, and like I couldn't find all this material online. Like I want to find the second set on the Tonight Show. The set I loved. I thought it was well structured and crafted, and just joke after joke after joke, which is what I want to see. That's my favorite type of comedy. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I left there with any more insight than when I walked in. That's fine. And maybe he does have a thin layer of social criticism, And that's my fault for not getting it. And I'll review it, and maybe there is. But I loved it. Any final thoughts for you?
Nope. I'm the one who asked you that. Where can we find more of your stuff? Where can we reach out to you if we start to, if we fall in love with you after hearing this interview?
Yeah, I can be found on Instagram at Christ Estrada. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Lupe Christ Estrada. I changed it. So it's Lupe Christ Estrada, and I'm pretty much only active on Instagram, and I don't tweet a whole lot. But on Instagram, I will post clips every now and then. Recently, I posted an animated clip done by Jesse Velasquez. Shout out to him. Very funny comic and a great animator who just started. And I have another animated clip coming up soon of one of my favorite bits. So I'll share that with you when it comes out.
Oh, very cool. Okay, well, Lupe, thanks for coming on and helping me kill this frog.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me.